every single day I feel
the Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm blessed, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Welcome back. Welcome back to That One Studio. It's your boy C-Rock here on What Are You Made Of Show. Actually, the What Are You Made Of Show. I've changed it to that, and it's the new season, so to speak. I don't really have seasons on my show. Like, I hear people do seasons all the time. I have no idea what that means. They think they're like Friends or something, the show Friends or something. I don't know. But I just started a new phase of this show. And if you're listening, you're listening to the What Are You Made Of Show. The old one, you can listen to some of the other episodes. That's What Are You Made Of Show. And I have a great guest for you today. I know I say that all the time, but it keeps getting better and better. And I cannot wait to hear Moira's story. And as a struggling addict turned seven-figure CEO, she is here to show you that you can achieve anything you desire through the power of vision, manifestation, and a solid dose of action. As an elite high-performance coach, she is on a mission to empower people to break through to next-level performance through everyday hacks. Her signature book of proof, Journal, and VPM method combines manifestation techniques rooted in neuroscience and actionable goals. It's a process she credits to helping her achieve the number one spot in a billion-dollar company and mentoring so many other people to massive successes. Listen, I got a treat for you all today. Moira Kassava's in the building. What's up, Moira?
I am so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, thank you for your time. And I have a feeling that we're going to be sharing some great stories and inspiring some people today. But let's start the show the right way.
Yeah.
And that is with the question, what are you made of?
I literally just saw this in an email you guys sent over like 2 minutes before. And I always intentionally try not to look at too much stuff, right? Because I like to answer off the cuff. And I would have to say grit, like grit and resiliency. You know, it's pretty much who I am and how I operate. And that only came from, you know, face planting a million times and rock bottoms. I always say rock bottom will teach you more than any mountaintop will. So I would say grit and resiliency.
Yeah, I love that answer. Yeah. I wrote a book called Rocket Fuel, Convert Setbacks, Become Unstoppable.
Yes.
And I think our journeys kind of parallel each other in a way with that. And you're in recovery right now. How long have you been sober?
I just celebrated 25 years.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
So, you know, for me, we were talking in the green room and she said, are you from, what did you say, Maryland?
I kept saying, where are you?
Yeah. And then I said, Maryland. She said, holy cow. And she is from Salisbury, Maryland. I went to college in Salisbury, played football there, and partied there.
Yeah.
And it started out as a very, very fun experience for me. Moira, I'll just share that I was an athlete. And in high school, I didn't drink, focused on grades and athletics. Mm-hmm. And when I got to Salisbury, I came from a really small town, and I got to Salisbury, and I saw a different type of women and quantity of women and parties. And I was like, holy cow, this is like Disney World. And I lost focus on what I was focused on. And I switched focus, which led me down a path that was so much fun at first.
Yeah.
Like things that are bad for you usually are. And then it led into a place of darkness.
Yeah.
And for those that haven't read my book, you can go check it out. I'm not going to get into it today because this show is not about me today. It's about Moira. And so Moira, take us through like where like everybody's got a story, right?
Yeah.
What's your story?
I mean, this is wild, because you are literally sitting, you know, in the town that my darkest days and some of my greatest times, but some of my darkest days. And you're sitting in that city right now. You know, I grew up 25 minutes down the road from there, but you're in Ocean City, which is, you know, the party place. And so I grew up in Salisbury, small town, Irish Catholic family, youngest of six kids. And I think it's important to say, like, my life was really normal. Like, my family was really normal. We were functioning. You know, there wasn't any crazy addiction or abuse. None of that. Like, all, you know, all the love, like, super normal. I would say myself that I was born, looking back as a child before I became an addict, I was super driven. Like, type A, locked on, athletics, like, you know, academics, like whatever I did, I needed to win. Like, I don't want to play if I can't win. And that's been me since I was like three, you know? So I've always been a competitor. But I was also naturally just gifted with the brain, you know, for the academics. I was gifted with the athleticism for the sports. And so the only thing I can honest to God look back on is like, it was this perfect storm of a personality type coupled with nobody putting pressure on me besides society rewarding all of those accomplishments. And a kid, what kid doesn't love that? You know, so you start to build this internal pressure of like, well, shit, who am I if I'm not this star athlete, if I'm not this star student, if I'm not, you know, on everybody's pedestal? And I think the first time I drank, I was just like, oh my God, I can take a deep breath for the first time in my entire life. That's how kind of tight I was, you know, and I immediately wanted that feeling again. And again, like the next weekend, it started out, you know, the next weekend. And then just time between those, you know, just drinking and using, but really drinking, just started to, you know, get closer together. And by my senior year in high school, I mean, I was supposed to be athletic scholarship going med school route. I always wanted to be a doctor since as far back as I could remember. And I had thrown it all away. I was drinking daily. I look back and think, how did my parents not? But again, you've got to remember, number one, I was the sixth kid. So they were a little bit done. But number two, I was the kid they never had to worry about. I was the one that got the best grades. I was the one that was super independent. You know, I was the successful, like in all things. So they didn't have to parent me really. And so then they said to all of us, they said, hey, we're not going to let you like throw our money away. So you got to go to school here for the first year. And then if you prove it to us, you can go wherever you want. And so I went to school in my hometown to Salisbury University. And that just downward spiral just, I mean, literally got worse, you know, every day, every week, every month. And I always say it's like, you know, when you're in a relationship and you break up with somebody before they can break up with you, I like quit school before they could officially kick me out. But by my junior year, and I think it was my junior year, like that's how much of a blackout I was in those years. I want to say it was my third year of college that I was like, I'm out. I'm going to go figure my life out. And, you know, and then I ended up moving out to California and ended up getting sober out there. Thank God, like 9 months after I landed in Southern California. So that's the short story of addiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it starts with alcohol.
Yeah.
See, when I was in high school, they talked about gateway drugs. And I was like, yeah, I'm not even going to do drugs. I'm not going to listen. And it was alcohol. Then it was weed. Then it was coke. And then it was ecstasy. And then it was mushrooms. And I was like, man, this is cool. It feels good, man. This and that. And then you just don't realize for anybody listening, do not start because it's something where you start to, in your mind, and I want to know if you went through this.
Yeah.
You start to justify things and create stories. And I talk about this a lot in performance is that you cause and create your life,
mm-hmm.
right? But you start telling yourself stories of why it's okay.
Yeah.
And then it leads to more and more and more. And then when I met my wife, I couldn't imagine not drinking, especially on the weekends. Like, where are we going? Like, where are we going?
Right.
Where's the party? Right. So can you talk about that justification that you went through when you were doing it too? Because I think we all do if we have any kind of ethics or conviction.
Yeah.
Right?
I think a huge part of it is you seek relationships, friendships, or hanging out with people that just keep getting kind of, I hate to say lower in the totem pole, but I'm talking about in regards to like functioning. You know, you start hanging out with people that, you know, if you're hanging out with one group of friends and they're like, dude, why are you drinking during the week? Then you just start finding the friends that are drinking during the week. So it's normal. You normalize everything. I can remember, oh my gosh, you're like bringing me back. So I was arrested drunk driving, coming over the Route 90 bridge. I mean, think about this. Route 90 bridge, there's like the death toll on that bridge is insane. I was just out of my mind. So I thank God from that police officer that happened to be right there that night and pulled me over. I think I got like 16 points on my license in one night because it was like driving into oncoming traffic. I mean, just it was insane. Jeez. And I can remember the shame I felt the next day, right? Like getting out of jail and having to go see my dad and finding the friends, the guy friends, because, you know, I was only partying at the same level of like my guy friends. And then one of my guy friends being like, huh, you know, welcome to the team, because they all had DUIs. and you grab a hold of that, right? Like, okay, there's nothing wrong with me. I don't have to feel shame about this. This is normal in this group. And you just push it down. You push the shame down and you laugh about it and you keep on going. And what I realized too is so often my behavior is what continued to fuel the drinking, right? Like there was another night that I'm like bringing up two of the worst nights, but there was another night where I wrecked a car, flipped, had to get cut out of the car and didn't get hurt, probably because I was so drunk. And I had like glass in my forehead, I was pulling glass out. And I remember just thinking like, I either need to end my life because I feel so, I can't even like look my parents in the eyes. Like I'm so ashamed, or I could just go drink and numb it out and black it out and pretend like this didn't happen and just push those feelings down. And you just go harder, faster, deeper into that addiction because you literally can barely live with yourself on a conscious level. It's a hard place to be.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, enough about that because it brings up like I was talking about these days at one point. And by the way, we talk about, oh, that's the group and we get around these people. We were the wrong people for people to hang out with.
Yeah.
You know, and you have to identify that too, right? Yeah. Like I feel terrible for the people that I caused to be encouraged by that behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, so, all right. So then Southern California, like what drew you to California? Why'd you go out there? And then what happened to make, you know, that what was the catalytic moment for you to get sober?
Yeah. So ever since I was a little girl, I wanted to be in California. It was like just this internal draw. And so I was literally trying to run away from my problems, landed there, continued the downward spiral. And then there was a night that we were all going to the bar, we were at my friend's house, and this girl walked in. I'll never forget, she walked in the apartment, like in the door. I'd never seen her before. And she was like, she was just like this bright light. And I remember, and this is probably hindsight, but I remember looking back thinking like, I used to be friends with people like that. Like not the you know, the lower level people that are barely, you know, the addicts of society. Like she was like, looked normal. And I just remember thinking, I used to be friends with people like that. Like I used to be like that. And here I was just so trapped in my addiction. Well, we went out to the bar that night and somebody ordered a round of drinks and she wasn't drinking. And they said, what, are you an alcoholic? And she was like, yeah, full blown. And I was like, what? Like, who says that? Like, what normal person? And you're at a bar, like, and you're having fun. Like, what is happening? And so I picked up the phone and asked her for help the next day. Like God given action there. Like, I don't feel like that was me. And that kind of started this road of in and out of, you know, recovery meetings, AA. And then finally, like rock bottom of all rock bottoms, I had gone home for Christmas. You know, that last, like, you know, trying to get sober. My parents at that point really knew how bad it was. And I ended up relapsing in freaking Salisbury and got back to San Diego off that airplane and was just ready to end my life. And I mean, the gig was up. Like I couldn't at that point. I felt like I can't get sober. Like I'm trying and I can't get out of this. And so I've got no other option. And one of my friends came knocking on my door and brought me to a meeting. And that was the beginning of the last 25 years, just one foot in front of the other, truly one day at a time. You know, I mean, I lived sobriety that first year, really. Like I was so incredibly blessed to get sober in Southern California, where there's like thousands of young people, you know, doing crazy, crazy stuff in sobriety. Like it was a wild, amazing life to live sober. And I don't know if I could have gotten sober in another place, you know, because it was, I mean, you're seeing Hollywood celebrities next to you when you're getting sober. So it was kind of, I don't know. It was just a beautiful place to get sober. Yeah.
Yeah. And how long did it take for you to start enjoying life again without using?
A little while, you know, I can literally remember, I feel like the first couple months, like I truly felt like I was like, when the definition of white knuckling, like practically sitting on your hands, just miserably like getting through the minutes of every day. And I can remember one day we were living in, I lived in Mission Beach in San Diego, like Mission Beach PB area. And we went for like a bike ride and we saw some friends. And I just remember thinking like, oh my God, I think this is the first time I've smiled. Like, I think this is the first time I felt like a tiny bit of joy and ease. Like, I hadn't felt that. And that was 60 days into sobriety. So it was like, I started to see a light, you know, I started to see that this could feel different. And, you know, but I really think it was probably most of that first year till I kind of found my footing. Like, I don't know how to do things sober. I don't know how you have fun sober. I don't know how to do this life without drinking at every single thing, you know? And so it was like, I was relearning to walk. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, even still to this day, I'll go to Miami or LA and friends of mine that I, you know, maybe know or do business with or what have you, they'll stay out late. I'll leave and sneak away and I'll go to bed. And I get up early and go to the gym and I feel like I'm an oddball for some reason. It's right. Like weird. And then I start, obviously most of the people I hang out with do this way that we do it now. But, and it's like, man, I'm so glad. And then I wake up in the morning and I feel great. I was in Miami a few months ago and I was leaving in the airport. It was like 5:30 in the morning. And, I looked on Instagram and some of the people that I knew were still in the club.
Right.
And I was like, man, I feel so great right now. I got sleep 6-7 hours. You know, and man, it just like makes me sick to my stomach in a little bit, but yeah. You want to help people, you know, and,
right.
And I think the best thing to do for us to help people is just continue to live the way we do. Now, I want to share something with you, a perspective, and I want to get your thoughts on this.
Yeah.
Because it kind of goes against, you know, talking about being sober and labeling ourselves an addict. And I have a little bit of a different perspective because I do this with business too, because I think people lose their identity. Mm. In business, athletes, veterans, they start to identify with what they do versus mm-hmm. who they actually are.
Yes.
And so what I found is that in through a lot of research and observation, that I feel like we're who we are once we identify who we are. And these things that we do happen to be the vehicles that we're driving to a particular mission.
Right.
Now, whether you identify your mission or you are, if you don't identify your mission, you're grabbing onto someone else's mission and goals mm-hmm. and you're doing it for them. Which is what we did when we were drinking and all that partying. And so I start to think about, okay, those are just vehicles. And when I think of it this way, if I identify my mission, I get clear with my intention, then I got to take different vehicles because mm-hmm. the vehicles are what I go to the mission with and I can get in and out of vehicles. And so now I don't like to talk about the fact that I'm an addict or I partied or anything like that.
Yeah.
I mean, I talk about it, but I really talk about more of the intention and then what vehicles are you getting into?
Yeah.
And because I don't like to, I think sometimes it can hold you back.
Yes.
With the labeling of I'm an addict or I'm sober this many years now and this and that. And I know it's encouragement and it's milestones, but something in me says, I don't want to limit myself.
Right.
Like that, you know? So what are your thoughts on that?
I love that you brought this up because I went through this about a decade ago and it was really right before the entire rise of my success. And I was at a place where I kept thinking to myself, I was carrying shame and a little bit of less than, especially I'm in the South, right? It's not like cool to be, it's not as cool and wildly accepted to be sober as it was in California. I mean, if you weren't drinking at a party in California, everyone's like, oh, are you in recovery? Like it was just common, you know? And it was like, oh, that's so cool. So is my cousin or what, you know, like it was just, it was so normal. I moved to the South and like kind of went underground with it, right? So then I carried for the first 15 years of my sobriety a lot of shame and a lot of less than and a lot of I don't really fit in and this is uncomfortable. And so about 10 years ago, I was like, this is not serving me. But here's the thing. My sister died of alcoholism. And I remember being so backed in a corner with this idea because I knew I had to change that identity, but it was life or death, right? If I forget that I'm an addict, I'm going to die. I'm going to end up using just like my sister. And I'm not going to be alive for my children. Like this isn't something I can roll the dice on and take a chance. But I knew there was something there. And what I realized was my belief was that I was born an alcoholic. I was born an addict. I was, you know, my genetics are that of an alcoholic. I believe that to the tips of my toes. And what I had to reframe was, wait a second. And this was not as easy as wait a second. It took a lot of work. But I was like, I wasn't born addicted to alcohol. I wasn't born addicted to drugs. I was born with something inside of me that's different that makes me freaking lock on, go to the next level. And it's actually the reason why I was so successful in every sport. I was so successful in academics. And maybe it can be the thing that makes me wildly succeed in business. And now I can look back and be like, the same exact thing that drove me to almost death allowed me to make millions of dollars. It's the same exact thing. It's not alcoholism. It's not addiction. It's like a gene that makes me driven, right? And that driven, and that's a lot of times what I talk to my kids about. I'm like, listen, if you have this genetic predisposition, if you have this in you, it can literally be the thing that makes you, like my son, for example, he wants to play MLB. I know everybody wants to play MLB, but like that's where he's at, right? And I'm like, so this thing, if you have what I have, it can be the reason you become a Major League Baseball player, and it can be the reason you don't become a Major League Baseball player. You get to choose. How do you want to use that, right?
Yep.
And so then that identity becomes my superpower versus it holding me back. And I believe that today to the tips of my toes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like that.
And you think about it, if you think about athletes and ultra marathon runners and guys that are riding 100-foot waves, I'm like, I bet they all have the same thing I do, right? And when I started to figure out this whole thing, I was actually at brunch one day with a girlfriend of mine whose husband is an ultra marathon runner. So hundreds of miles. That's not normal. And I was like, hey, Lee, can I ask you a question? He's like, yeah. I was like, do you have alcoholism in your family? And he's like, yeah. Why, like, where'd that come from? And I was like, oh, proves my theory. Proves my theory. Like, you have that. You're just not drinking. You're running. You're running instead, right? So it's just fascinating to me that that is not being talked about more in the world of addiction. Because addiction is just 100%. Looked at as a total negative.
Yeah. I think it's like we need a manual of how to use
this
power. It's actually a superpower.
Totally.
And if you watch movies, superpowers can be for the evil guy, but it also is for the superhero.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So then how did the business start to take off? Like, how did you get clear on what you were doing there? Because, you know, a lot of times I found I just fell into something where I could make some money. We talked in the green room about the mortgage business and the real estate business I was in. But like, there's also like, it seems like there's a lot of options for us.
Yeah.
And then as entrepreneurs, you start like, you get this thing where you're like looking all over the place. Like, how did you fall into what you did and what you're doing now?
So my background was health and wellness and business. And so I fell into network marketing, which I would have never done. Like, hello, I'm supposed to be a doctor. Like, I'm not going to sell jewelry or some cheesy network marketing pyramid scheme. But I fell into Beachbody, which is now, they changed the name. But back then it was Beachbody, P90X, right? So it's amazing.
Are they the same thing, by the way?
What, Beachbody and P90X?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I didn't know they were
connected. So Beachbody's the parent company. One of their first successful programs was P90X. Tony Horton, yeah. So it was fitness that was phenomenal and worked, right? It was supplements that were clean and good. But the other component was personal growth. And so as I started to dabble in that, I was like, this is kind of what I've been doing my whole life, but it's like packaged in a business model that I believe and I'm a natural leader and I know how to run a business. And, you know, I have a lot of skill set in that area. So I was able to build a, you know, ridiculously fast and successful network marketing business. That also gave me a lot of skill sets because when you're at the tippy top of a company like that, you know, I always laugh at public speaking was always my biggest fear. Like, I hate it. I can remember sitting on the steps of a building in Salisbury University, puking right before I had to go in front of a classroom. Jeez. Puking. I was so nervous. That could have been the alcoholism too, but I digress. But when I was in this opportunity, you know, being at the top of a billion-dollar company, they're like, hey, we need you to speak on stage in the Superdome in front of 23,000 people. That was my first major public speaking. I mean, presidents don't usually talk to 23,000 people.
Jeez.
So it put me in positions and different opportunities to really develop a skill set that I could have never just developed on my own. You know, if you want to be a public speaker, you can't magically put yourself on stage at the Superdome. And so then I was able to kind of pivot into like you know, launching a couple books, launching the podcast, coaching women outside of that bubble, because that's what I'm really good at. Naturally, I'm just a really good coach, business and mindset wise. And so pivoting outside of that bubble, because I felt like, gosh, there's all these women that I could so help on in such incredible levels that just aren't in the bubble that I'm living in. So let me kind of open up, you know, other avenues to be able to help women out outside of that bubble. So, yeah.
Gotcha. And then so what I found with a lot of network marketing, you build this network, right? Which is great. Your network is your net worth, and it's true. Mm-hmm. But then you are also at the mercy in a way of that organization. And if that organization goes a different direction that you're not aligned with, what they start to falter, they go out a bit, whatever the case is, then it's like, it's that same thing what I felt in the mortgage business where I was a prisoner to the rates.
Yes.
I was a prisoner to the market and my emotions would go up and down. And then I just, when I just started to build my brand and start building my own company and my asset, I started to realize like I'm in control now.
Yes.
And I didn't want to. So did you go through that process and into what you're doing now?
100%. And I think it's interesting because network marketing is kind of like this island in the middle where you're not necessarily quote unquote working for the man, you know, you're not in an office job. So it seems like, and it is a ton of freedom because you get to call the shots, you're making your own hours, you're working when you want to work, but you have kind of this company that's, you know, producing the product, shipping the product. So it's kind of the best of all worlds, especially if you are entry level entrepreneur, like it's the smartest business model ever. But you do, you get to a point where you realize I don't have full control here. And that's, you know, for me, it's like, I think that's the other part that I was born with. Like, I don't like anybody or anything having control over me. You
know? Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why, yeah, I was like, I've got to be able to make sure if anything happens over here that I've got income coming in, that I've built a name for myself and, you know, all of that. So,
yeah.
So that was the pivot.
So now from what you're doing now, like, what are you building right now? What's your focus? What's your, you know, got your attention?
Yeah. So I have a high level mastermind. I call it the 2% tribe. So super high level women entrepreneurs looking to either launch a business or scale their current business. So I have that. And then we're getting ready to launch. When is this airing?
Probably in the next week or two.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to say this. We're getting ready to launch something epically amazing, super incredibly affordable. Partnering with people like Trent Shelton and Bedros Koulian and just a lot of Randy Garn, a lot of amazing thought leaders that will be part of that. So just be on the lookout for that. It's launching in the next month. But that's going to be my practice. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, on that note, where can people go? Where's the best place for them to engage with you right now? Like, I want to make sure that they can engage with you if they don't see that right this second, right?
Yeah, like, absolutely. So Moira Casaba is Instagram. That's really where I show up the most. But my website's the same, moiracasaba.com. YouTube's the same. TikTok's the same. All the platforms are the same because it's such a different name that nobody else has it, thank goodness. But I show up on Instagram the most. So they can definitely connect with me in the DMs there if they want to.
Okay. And so you're getting ready to launch something else. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I could talk to you for hours. So, I mean, it's like the show, I got to extend it, but it's kind of, you know, I respect everybody's time. So, I want to talk about, before I get into the next vision for yourself, I want to end with that, but like, let's talk about podcasting for a second. When you started a podcast, I'm assuming you go on shows as well regularly.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So what has podcasting done for you personally and professionally?
Gosh, I mean, it is everything. And I want to back up and say this, that like, it was a monkey on my back for 2 to 3 years. You know, I'm like a big goal person. So I like sit down, deep dive on my goals every year, reverse engineer them, like make sure I'm hitting them, all that. And for 2 or 3 years, I was like, podcast, like this is the year I'm going to launch the podcast. And then I get caught up in fear. I've got too much on my plate and it would back burner. And then a few years ago, I was like, I am so sick of saying I'm going to do a podcast and then not doing it. And so you really just have to, anything in business, right? You just got to freaking jump off the cliff and do it and do it messy and do it not knowing all the different pieces. And so I jumped into that. And personally, it has become what you and I talked about right before we hit record, like my joy, like my, it's my happy place. Like I could just sit here and be interviewed and interview all freaking day. Like it fills my cup so much to just connect with other human beings. So it balances out the grind for me, you know? But talking about like professionally, I mean, it's that same piece though. It's like building relationships with people that are operating in your sphere, on your level, that you just instantly connect with. Because I mean, just like you, it's like, this is the real deal when you're on my show. Like, we're not here to just talk about surface stuff. Like, I'm here to dive deep. And then I really try to foster those and continue those friendships, because like, that's everything in business, but it's also everything to me on a personal level. You know, people are what make life worth living.
Well, especially the right people, right? Like, it's like the same thing. You start to hang around with these folks now instead of the party folks,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
And now you're contributing something positive versus bringing other people down. Like, that's the thing I keep looking at. Like, I started off with this attitude of, those sons of bitches, man, they brought me down. The person introduced me to this drug or this. And then I start to think about, wait a minute, that's not achieving anything. Like, what did I do?
Right.
Where's my level of responsibility?
Yep.
Responsibility. And that's where you get control, right?
Yeah, that is. That's where all your control is. Man, that's hard to teach kids. But I'm like, what's your part in this? Because that's the only thing you can control, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And how about your brand? What has podcasting done for your brand and your business?
I mean, I think it's just, that's a great question. I don't really think about it that often, but I think it just elevates it, right? Like anytime you have a podcast, you are consistently putting messages out there. I think for me too, because I do a balance of interviews and personal, just, you know, my solo episodes. And so it's such an opportunity for me to go deeper, you know, with people, with things I want to teach, versus you can't do that on an Instagram, you know, clip. You know what I mean? So it's like to build rapport with people. I mean, long form content is going to convert customers way more than short form content. So a podcast is long form content.
Yeah. And like, if you go on an Instagram live, for example, it's like, people can't really listen to it on the treadmill or on a jog or in the car necessarily. So podcasting allows people to do that and consume the content. And long form, like with especially podcasting, I think 52% of people listen to the whole episode when they start an episode. So,
that's crazy.
It's powerful.
Yeah, for sure.
So, all right, as we wind down here, I have a question for you. If I could snap my fingers and make it happen, okay, what's the vision that you have? Like, where are you going? If what would have to happen to light you up?
Gosh, well, a lot lights me up already. So I don't think anything else that needs to happen to light me up. But I think the big vision, and this may sound like egotistical, but like from a young age, I felt like there was something inside me where I'm like, I'm supposed to like teach the world, right? Like I'm supposed to, not that I know everything, but like I'm just supposed to be a voice for the masses. And at this point, at 46 years old, I'm like, well, now I do know a lot. Right. I know so much that people, I always feel like if you just knew a few things, if you just had a couple concepts, if I could just teach you some frameworks, if I could just teach you some 1-2-3s, like your life could be so much more joyful and you would be free of like just trudging this road of like monotony. And so that's my passion. Like, that's what I want to do. I just want my voice and what I teach and what I do to help, you know, millions of people.
So have you ever felt like this, like with the ability that you have and experiences that you've been through, right? Have you ever felt like the best kept secret?
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting in the network marketing company, because I used to feel like there was obviously a point, especially when you're in the number one spot, where there's, you know, thousands of people just like fawning over you and dying to get a picture with you and hanging on to your every word and bawling their eyes out because you've changed their life so much. And that was like a microcosm. I was like, well, I became well known in this bubble. And if this was how I've impacted people, then I know I can do that on a huge level. Then it becomes a struggle of how do I get my voice out there? How do I get on that level so people can just hear this, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Well, I got to share with, you know, some things with you after we get off of here. Cause I mean, there's some things that I figured out. And it will actually just add rocket fuel to what you're doing. So I'll share that with you here afterwards. I don't want to share it with everyone here yet because not everybody's ready for this information. I always tell people I don't share this with everybody, but it's you got to be in a position where you're ready for it. Mm-hmm. And once you are ready for it, the stuff that I'll share with certain people will just explode beyond what they could even imagine. They thought they were doing what they could be doing. But so I'll That's share that amazing. With you afterwards. But Moira, I want to thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure, and I appreciate the vulnerability and transparency, because I do think it does definitely impact people.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. This has been, like, honestly the best part. I know at the end of the day, when I put my head in the pillow, I'm going to be like, this is the best hour of my day. So thank
Let's
you
go.
For that.
Let's go. Yes. Thank you so much. All right. Hang tight while I wrap this up. Folks, thank you so much for being here, listening or watching, however you're consuming this content. It's your boy C-Rock signing off from That One Studio. Make sure you go like, subscribe, do all the things, and then go to the Instagram for Moira Kasaba, and also check mine out if you haven't already. We want to continue to pour into you and help you have a better life so you don't fall into the same traps that we did. Maybe some of you need to fall into those traps, because some of you may be hardheads like we were. You know, stubborn is not a bad thing when it's on the right thing. So it's your boy C-Rock here signing off from That One Studio on the What Are You Made Of show. Until next time, beat that one. Music.